Hi everyone, thanks again for listening. For this week's episode, I sat down with Chris Mullen. He's one of the founding members of the formation of the PFLAG group in Morgantown, and he's also the president. PFLAG stands for Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. PFLAG stands for Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, but the group is also inclusive of those who are bisexual, pansexual, trans, and queer. Basically, any allies and members of the LGBTQ community are welcome to attend their meetings. I talked with Chris about the importance of PFLAG in West Virginia, as well as allyship and what the group hopes to accomplish. Let's hear from Chris.
My name's Chris Mullet.
And so you said that you're involved with setting up a PFLAG organization here in Morgantown, correct?
I am. In September of last year, we had our first exploratory meeting, and I think 15 of us gathered at Suncrest United Methodist Church, and just to determine where people were and how much energy there was around creating PFLAG in this community. And there was a lot of energy around it. And so the next meeting, we decided to elect some officers, and they elected me president. And so we've just been forging ahead, having monthly meetings, and we're almost there.
Awesome. So do you mind for people who don't know what PFLAG is, do you mind telling me a little bit about it?
So the acronym PFLAG is Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. It was started in 1973, I think, in order to provide support for families that were trying to support people who were in the LGBT community back then. So, and that's actually why I'm in it too. So,
why is it, do you think it's important for Morgantown to have its own chapter of PFLAG?
So, at our exploratory meeting, there were of the 15 people that were there. As we went around the room and introduced ourselves and shared why we were there, probably 8 of those people said that they were the parent of a gay child who no longer lives here. And that has been my experience, that kids that grow up gay in West Virginia end up somewhere else. And we need to normalize different gender identities here in West Virginia so that our kids don't have to leave.
I mean, like, I know that West Virginia doesn't have statewide non-discrimination law against people who have different gender identities and different sexual orientations.
Right.
Morgantown does have a LGBTQ protection ordinance.
Right.
I think Buckley is also working towards that.
They are. They're,
Beckley? Sorry about when, Buckley.
Beckley is able to pass theirs, they will be the 13th municipality in West Virginia that has that non-discrimination ordinance, but it's a battle, and so I think that having a group like PFLAG here will help to give some strength, some courage to people who want to stand up and say, no, this isn't who we need to be. There isn't any reason to fear people who are different. That's where I am with this.
And, sorry, I lost my train of thought for a second. I'll get it back. So what do you guys have to do to be, like listed on the website, kind of an official chapter? Do you guys have anything else to do?
Yeah, there are, I think, 9 steps that you have to take. And so we've gotten through 6 of those. And now we have to file some more paperwork. So you send one group, one information packet back to the national office. And really, they just want to be, I mean, I don't know any other way to say it than this. It's about branding. They want to be sure that the group that's here and everywhere is going to play by their rules. So you mm-hmm. sign a lot of documents that say you understand what PFLAG is and that you're not going to violate that. For instance, PFLAG is not an advocacy organization as far as political advocacy. We're not going to be lobbying down in Charleston as PFLAG. Now, individuals can do that, but PFLAG wants to stay out of the political realm. It's about supporting families and mm-hmm. friends. And and they're very committed to that mission. And that's really good because I've been in nonprofit work for a long time, and I see people drifting with their mission, and PFLAG knows what they do. They're committed to what they do, and they make sure that every chapter is doing the same thing, and that's really wise. So at this point, we have to send a couple more things back now to the national office, and I would say today's January 9th as we're recording this, or January 10th, and I would say that by the middle of February, we will be an official chapter.
That's awesome. So once you guys are an official chapter, what would you guys be doing? Like, how often will you be meeting? What kind of stuff will you be working on?
Well, actually, and we've actually been doing all that stuff. The only thing that we can't do as a formation group, we've called ourselves the Morgantown PFLAG Formation Group, and the only thing that we've not been able to do is call ourselves PFLAG. And we've had meetings. We've been meeting at the LGBTQ Center here on campus, and so we've had speakers. We've done some planning for outreach and support. We share information. That's one of the really important things about any marginalized people is getting together so that everybody is able to have the information that's there and see that, oh, I'm not alone, and here's some people that I didn't know. And, I have a new friend in town who I go to church at the First Presbyterian Church on Spruce Street here in Morgantown, and I drive 45 minutes every Sunday from Bridgeport because it's a radically inclusive church. We have elders and deacons and leadership in the church who are in the LGBTQ community, and that's why I'm there. And so when we get together as people, we're strengthened. And so I think at our next meeting we're going to have the outreach and education team is inviting some a lawyer and a couple of school counselors and some different folks to come and function kind of as a panel for us, for people who have firsthand contact on a regular basis with people in the community, to say, this is what's needed. This is what you could do to provide better support. So we're doing that, and then we're going to do like we're having a chili cook-off thing in March or April, just as a way to be able to invite friends to this event. So anyway, we're having monthly meetings and sharing lots of information, sharing, where people can go for support. That's what we do.
That's awesome. So I looked at PFLAG's website just kind of get like a little bit of research and I understand what the group's about and all uh-huh. that stuff. So when I looked at trying to find like a location in West Virginia, obviously Fairmont's the first one that popped up.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen any other ones besides you guys will eventually join the website, of course,
right.
once you're official. But why do you think that the amount of like PFLAG groups is like down to like two and they're pretty close together? Mm.
So the only PFLAG group that was in West Virginia prior was in Charleston, and they're just not active now. There's one woman who still takes calls and stuff, but she's I think in her 70s, and they travel a lot. They're retired and they're in Florida half the year, and so her phone number is still available to people, so people from the Charleston area will call her and reach out to her for help. But I think it takes a lot of effort, first of all. I mean, somebody has to decide to do this. Mavis Grant Lilly goes to our church, First Presbyterian, and we actually have an LGBTQ task force at our church, which is probably pretty unusual. but out of that, Mavis called this exploratory meeting in September that has resulted in what now is a very strong group of about 30 people who are really committed to doing this. And but that's why it doesn't exist, is because it takes a lot of effort. And I think too that there's a coming out of people who are in the LGBTQ community, but there's also a coming out for family and friends. When my daughter came out to me 3 years ago, I was incredibly supportive of her. I had no issues. I said, that's that's great, honey. You know, that was my response. That's great. Let's go have a lunch. But then making decisions around how you share that information with other people because you want to protect your, you know, she was 15 mm-hmm. at the time, right? So how do you protect? So, there wasn't anybody I could talk to. So I reached out to some gay friends that I have, a couple of lesbian couples that I'm real close to, and said, okay, this is where we are. How do I help her? How do I, you know, what do we do? And I realized then that, wow, there should be something here as support, but there just isn't. So it takes a lot of effort, and it takes some courage to be able to say to the community, just like with, I mean, my daughter, I think, is the bravest person I know. And I pray all the time to be as courageous as she is. But that's really what it takes, is it takes courage and it takes effort.
Yeah. And I mean, for people who, I mean, of course, when I came out to my parents, like, that's like, you know, it's for them, it's something different, a little bit different. Like, you know, like, you obviously know your kid for a pretty long time, and
right.
then they tell you something like new about themselves. And I'm sure, I mean, I'm not a parent myself, but as someone who has come out before,
right.
I'm going to guess that it's like, for some parents, it's a little different to kind of, like, especially if they are like straight people, they sometimes like, little bit of adjustment, but
yeah.
You know, I was always wondering with my parents, like, how they would like say mention it to my other parents if I was, you know, gay. Like, I was wondering if they had. I was always wondering about that. I mean, like, I don't mind if they did, but some people wouldn't mind if they talked about if their parents like mentioned, yeah, my daughter's gay, you know,
yeah.
kind of thing. But
that's
good to hear that you are doing all of this, like, to help make a more inclusive community for your
daughter. Yeah, I think that we lose, places like West Virginia lose a whole lot of beauty and creativity and intelligence, and we lose a lot, and not to mention just the family and friend relationships that we lose, and it just. So 15 years ago, I was a very conservative pastor who would have taken a completely opposite view of this, right? And it wasn't my own daughter coming out that changed me. I had my own issues that kind of, you know, pushed me toward just looking at life differently. And as I began to look at life differently, I began to look at the people in life differently. And, you know, everybody's got their stuff and nobody needs a hassle, right? Basically, just do you. But when I was, I can remember one particular incident when I was a pretty conservative pastor. A woman in our church had a brother who was gay, and he had left as a teenager and moved to Boston, and he had contracted AIDS and came home to die, essentially. So I spent a good bit of time with Scott during that time leading up to his death, and then conducted his funeral, and it was held in our church. And I remember thinking back then how incredibly tragic it was that young men and women had to leave if they wanted to live in any way a normal life. And it's not a normal life to have to be separated from your family and place in order to be authentically who you are. And I just think that that's absolutely tragic. You know, so we need to create a community where people can be authentically who they are and stay home.
That's incredible. Like, I was about to ask what changed for you, but that's a pretty powerful story there.
Yeah. Well, the one person that changed me the most was, you know, 10 years ago when I started working. I was the leader of I guess what's probably the largest Christian ministry in northern West Virginia. It's a homeless shelter. And so about 2 months into my time there, 10 and a half years ago, a woman came to live in our shelter who was gay. And I remember sharing the gospel with her. And after I did that, she said, "But what about my lifestyle?" And there was something that clicked in my head with that question. And I asked her, I said, "Well, is it a lifestyle?" And I had never thought about that issue at all. Like, I've heard, of course, being in the church, I heard all the time, lifestyle, lifestyle, lifestyle. But when she said it, what about my lifestyle? I just asked her, well, is it a lifestyle? Is this something, because a lifestyle is something you choose. Is this something you've chosen? And she said, heck no. Would I choose to have gone through all the crap that I've gone through in my life? She said, no, I've just, when the other little girls were flirting with boys in preschool and kindergarten, I was looking at them. She said, I've always liked girls. So that was kind of my coming out as that was my aha moment, was just that simple conversation of mm-hmm. recognizing that, oh, she didn't choose this. It's not a lifestyle. It's an identity. It's who you are. It's it's a great thing. Though I've just grown in my appreciation and understanding of the gay community and love it.
So how else has having your daughter come out to you? How else has that impacted your life, and how has it impacted your worldview?
Wow. So her coming out was very funny. We were sitting in my office at the ministry that I was running, and she said to me, she said, Dad, have you ever seen a man that was so attractive that he made you question your sexuality? And I said, no, honey, I haven't. But why do you ask? And she said, she walked over to me and had this magazine, and she showed me a picture of this young lady, and she said, because I think this woman is really beautiful. And I said, well, she is really beautiful. And she said, no, Dad, I think all women are really beautiful. And that's how it started, and it was really cool. So how it has changed me is that I have watched parts of her family reject her, and I am disgusted that I was ever in that place, but I was. So in one way, it gives me hope that people who are currently in a very anti position could become allies. I did. I went from anti to ally. So in one way it did that. But I also just, I watch these people and I wonder, how do they get to that place of being able to reject their own child or grandchild or friend, or it was really tragic to me to watch her lose part of her family, and part of them are coming back, but it'll never be the same, and that's really sad.
Wow, sorry, my voice is going here.
That's okay.
But wow, that's horrible to have to go through that.
It's tough to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I can only imagine. Mm-hmm. I've only had one kind of rejection to when I came out, but mm-hmm. from that one rejection, that really does, it hurts a lot.
Yeah.
It eats at you a little bit,
too. Like family traditions that she's grown up with, they're just gone.
Yeah.
Some of those, because of that rejection, and she's just not going to put herself around that.
Mm-hmm.
So those things, Christmas and Thanksgiving and the big ones,
yeah.
They're gone for her.
Oh, wow.
And so now it's, she now is in, I have always been supportive, but, and now I just recently got married and married to a woman who's very committed to LGBT rights and has a family, all of which are completely open and accepting. And it's just new, but it's still very sad mm-hmm. that what she grew up with and counted on just isn't there. It's not going to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you said before that a lot of people that you consider to be the people that are anti-LGBTQ, how do you think that people can go from anti to an ally?
Well, they could take my route and have a mental breakdown and be suicidal for 9 months and then come back out of that hole with a completely different picture of life, but I wouldn't recommend it.
No,
that was kind of a sucky way to change. And it wasn't around. That didn't have anything to do with LGBT stuff. my openness to all people was just kind of changed through that experience. You know, all the things that I thought I was really sure of suddenly kind of came unglued. And what I do with people is I send them lots of information. It's really hard. There's some great TED Talks. There's one TED Talk called "It's Not About Sex, It's About Survival" that is amazing. There's another one by Ash Beckham about living in a closet or coming out of a closet that is amazing.
Yes, I think I've seen that one.
There's a great for people who have a Christian worldview. There is a great video by Matthew Vines, he ended up writing a book called God and the Gay Christian, I think something like that. There's another book called Changing Our Minds by Dr. David Gushee. So people who are, and those people are both very serious, committed Christians, and they took a hard look at the six big verses, three in the Old Testament, three in the New Testament, and come to different conclusions. You don't have to have a traditional view. Just because this is the view that was passed down doesn't mean that it's the right view. And, you know, what does the original language really say? And what were the cultural situations really? And you know, when you look back, for instance, at the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, which is, you know, it's just kind of a weird story anyway, but there are 16 times in the Bible that Sodom and or Gomorrah are mentioned after the actual event in Genesis. And when it talks about the sin of Sodom, or Gomorrah, it doesn't ever talk about homosexuality. It talks about greed, violence. Those are the, you know, greed and violence. Who does that sound like? Right? It sounds like, you know, regular Americans. So I think that, you know, when you look more carefully and don't just take what's been handed to you, then you can change. But it takes courage to stand up and say, same-sex marriage was legalized across the United States by the Supreme Court action 3.5 years ago, I went to the same, the first same-sex wedding that was in Clarksburg. And, of course, I was leading this big Christian ministry. And I sat down next to an older couple that were lesbians, and the woman leans over to me and she said, "You're Chris Mullett, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "I had your son in school at WI, and you are the director of this ministry, right?" And I said, "Yeah." And she just began to weep, and she said, "Thank you for being here. I know what this could cost you." And because it could have, you know. And I called my board president and said, "Just want you to know I'm going to the first same-sex wedding that's in town, and whatever that means, it means. But they're my friends, and I'm not going to turn my back on them or miss this." So it take, you know, you've got to be willing to put yourself out there, and I think you just have to look at humans. Like how do you go from being anti to ally? I think it's easy to be anti when you're just reading text and taking tradition and talking about them and the gay agenda and all that stuff that the church tends to talk about. Since becoming an ally, I have found that the gay agenda is simply to be accepted like everybody else. Like, that's the agenda. Nobody's recruiting anybody, or, you know, those were all the fears that were engendered in the body, in the church, you know, and has been and still is. I mean, that's the, well, they're trying to take your children. Nope, they're not. So I think just the willingness to look at information and read some thoughtful things and to think about, in my case, my daughter, who was Mackenzie and is now Eli, though her pronouns are still she, her. But instead of looking at those people and that group, look at Eli. This is my daughter. And if people can just look at people and know people and hear their stories and sit down across a table and have coffee, and then the anti to ally trip can be a whole. I think that trip is as short as sitting down over coffee and having a conversation. And I think that's going to take some courage from both the anti group and the LGBT community to be able to sit down and listen and talk to one another, and which is, I think, true of any divide, right? The divide is bridged when people can sit down and talk to each other.
Exactly. So, is there anything that I forgot to ask about, or anything that you would like to say?
I guess at our last PFLAG meeting, one of the things that I decided to do was to have an announcement time, and so the things that came out of that were, like, there's a rally in support of a trans student that's going to be here in Morgantown this weekend. Of course, it'll be after this podcast or before this podcast airs, but and then I invited people to go to PFLAG in Pittsburgh because I want to see what a larger, long-term PFLAG group looks like. So I'm going to be taking a carload of people. One of our members shared that there is a Three Rivers Business Alliance, which is like a chamber of commerce, but it's for the LGBT community. And who knew, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so by getting involved in a group like PFLAG, not only is there the immediate support of people who you can look around the room and nod and say, yeah, me too, but there's also some really useful information about, you know, where very real and practical support is for the LGBTQ community. And PFLAG also is, you know, the group in Fairmont has, they're recruiting straight people because I think most of the people that attend theirs are in the queer community somehow. And so I'm actually going to go tonight to their meeting, and their president comes to our meeting. So I think that I want to say it is for family and friends, but it's also for people in the community who just need a safe place to come and you know, I'm a dad, I'm, you know, straight white male person, you know, if there are people in the gay community who need a surrogate dad or surrogate mom, my wife is amazing. You know, those are places that you can find adults who won't reject you, and where you can see gay and straight people in alliance together in a very real and powerful way. So I would invite people to come and get involved in PFLAG wherever they are. And if there isn't one where they are, start one.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. You can find Chris Mullett on Facebook, and to learn more about PFLAG, you can go to their website at pflag.org. If you like what you're hearing, leave a comment on wherever you listen to podcasts or on social media. I want to hear what you think about the episode, or if there's anything I can do better. If there's someone you want to have on the show, fill out the guest request form on the Queer Mountaineers website at podcastqueermountaineers.wordpress.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in for the next episode. Bye!